And joining us now, as they do most Fridays, are our regular political commentators, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution, and David Brooks of the New York Times. Happy Friday. Hello to both of you.
Happy Friday to you.
Now, as we just heard, unemployment numbers are up for the second month in a row, and the White House didn't want anyone to read too much into last month's dip. But here we are again. Is this a trend? And I'm wondering how the White House begins to answer that question posed by Congressman Hensarling of Texas. Where are the jobs?
Well, the first thing to be said is they've gotten it wrong, and a lot of people have gotten it wrong. They didn't expect this. Remember when the stimulus passed, they thought unemployment rate would be down around 7 when it's up at 9.2 now. Then we had the summer of recovery. So we clearly don't understand the way the economy is going, and I think that's because their models project that a certain amount of federal spending would create a lot of jobs, and the QE2, the monetary policy, would create a lot of jobs, and it's just not doing it. And now part of the problem is not their fault. When you have a financial crisis, you have a long, slow, very frustrating recovery, and we're sort of in the middle of a normal financial crisis recovery, which is very slow and miserable. But the thing that can be done is, I think over decades, we've added weight after weight to the economy and made it less flexible, a little more rigid, made it hard for people to hire and fire with various regulations and taxes and things like that. And it's time for a generation-long effort to really reduce that stuff.
EJ, not their fault. Now, Republicans aren't buying that argument.
Well, first of all, I think the only thing that David said I agree with is that the financial crisis has really – financial crises of this sort tend to create a long-term problem. The problem here isn't that the stimulus didn't work. It's that it wasn't big enough. The problem isn't that the Fed tried to boost the economy. In fact, at their last meeting, they said, we don't have to boost it anymore. Well, guess what? They were wrong. They need to boost it again. Because David is precisely right on the nature of how deep this is, they need to do a whole lot more than they were doing. But politically, it's a huge problem for the president. Even if it's the Congress that's going to hold up action, this is starting to look like a boulder in the road, not just a bump. Washington is talking about deficits, and the real economy is telling us the joblessness.
We're going to get to
deficits
in just a minute, though. But can the White House pull the levers to actually create jobs?
Well, they are talking about doing some things, but they don't have a lot of room to do things. They can try to pass another payroll tax cut, although it hasn't done so much this year. They maybe can extend it to business. They're talking about their infrastructure bank, an idea which is a good idea, although it would take time to get moving. But again, given the makeup of this Congress, it's hard to see anything substantial getting through between now and the election.
And if there's one thing we should learn from this, the government is really bad at short-term economic manipulation. It can lay the foundation for long-term growth, but manipulating jobs and the economy quarter by quarter, it's just beyond its power.
Just one thing on that, though. You know, David Leonhardt, a great blogger, economics writer at the Times, made the point that we've lost a 500,000 jobs in state and local government over the last 2 years. And if we had added them at the same pace we would have added 500,000 jobs. That's 1 million jobs lost. Government can clearly affect government employment. And the withdrawal of the stimulus from state and local governments has been costly.
A lot of those were government jobs. You know, we're going to move to this debate over the debt ceiling talks and the sort of Damocles that's hanging over everyone's head. EJ, in your column yesterday, you say that the president's goal, at least politically, is to get through this negotiation with a deal that keeps the government running but also keeps his political center intact. And he's got quite a roadblock there in his own party, in the Senate Democrats.
Right, and among House liberals. It does seem that they are now really serious about this big deal, which surprises me. They have a logic for it. They think if the people in Congress are going to vote for a smaller deal, $2.5 trillion, it's just as crummy a vote as a vote for a big deal, so why not go for a big deal? John Boehner seems genuinely interested. Washington never ceases to surprise. Who expected an Obama-Boehner mind melt? I think Boehner wants to get out from under the Ryan budget, and maybe a big plan will get some votes for him. And $1 trillion, if Obama can get it out of a Republican Congress, would be a lot of revenue. I'm still skeptical. There's still a lot of liberal Democratic mistrust. The just say no wing of the Republican caucus is very big. I still think you end up back with some smaller deal, although who knows how they pass it. But now at least Obama can say to elite opinion, well, I tried to get the big deal. And he can say politically to everybody else, look, are the Republicans interested in cutting the deficit or not? So I think that's where it ends up.
Whenever you have a sort of high-level negotiation and this kind of brinksmanship, there's this little thing called leverage that often determines where you land in the end. David, who has the leverage in this case?
It's both parties think the other one does right now, and I've spoken to both today. The Republicans think, hey, if we don't reach a deal, the Democrats will just close the national parks, they'll close Social Security, and they'll blame it on us. And so they're a little nervous. The Democrats, on the other hand, think, hey, if this thing goes down and we have a big crisis, they're going to blame the president. And so we're out of luck. And so both of them are feeling very vulnerable. And I think that's one of the reasons you see so much movement these days. I think what's happening in Washington is kind of great. You've got Republicans and Democrats, serious negotiators, doing serious things. The liberals on the left, on the extreme left, and on extreme right are very unhappy. But this is the first time in years we've begun to see real talking on big stuff. I think it's kind of great.
You know, I talked to a senator today, and he described the sort of disconnect that when he goes home, he hears from people who think, oh, they're going to work it out. They're not going to shut the government down. They'll get a deal by August 2nd. And he says the people who are actually in the room involved in the negotiations aren't so sure about that.
The best and scariest metaphor I've heard in the last week is the guns of August, and the whole idea that we kind of the world blundered into World War I because a lot of people miscalculated. And I think a lot of people are fearful that could happen again. But I think I agree with David's general analysis of leverage. But I think the biggest problem is President Obama cannot preside over the catastrophe that would happen if we don't raise the debt ceiling, and that limits his options in a way that doesn't limit the Republican options. But Boehner is thinking like an incumbent, not just like an opposition person. He does seem to take seriously what this might do to the Republicans in the long term.
I'm curious about what both of you think about Boehner's negotiating tactics and his role in all this. I guess he and McConnell are not, Senator McConnell, are not necessarily in the same place, negotiating from the same place. And President Obama seems to see a possible dance partner with Boehner with all these meetings and the two of them playing golf. What do you think about his role in this and his negotiating skills?
I think he's been masterful for a year. I think he's exceeded expectations on all fronts. He's doing a very delicate dance where he's being open to a lot of stuff, a lot of revenues, a lot of changes that Republicans don't like. At the same time, he's very mindful of the fact he's got to pass it through his body. And so I think the sense I know in the White House is that they can get maybe 60 votes on the Democratic House side to pass this thing, but they would still need a lot of Republican votes. And so they're very mindful. Can they get the group to actually support this thing? If we're up to Obama and Boehner, we'd have a deal.
So you praise for Boehner, but you say that the Republican Party in your column this week may not even be a normal party anymore.
Right. I think Boehner is a normal politician. Whether the Republican Michelle Bachmann base is ready to go along with him, that is a very open question.
EJ.
See, I think Boehner's interests are very different than Mitch McConnell's interests. Boehner runs a majority. McConnell sees a majority around the corner. The Republicans are well set up to take back the Senate. So he doesn't really want to do much of anything to rock the boat. Boehner's problem is he is stuck between a Democratic rock and a Tea Party hard place. In order to get Democratic votes, you've got to have some revenue in whatever deal they have. But if you put too much revenue in, you start losing Republican votes. And Boehner has the possibility of a rebellion against his leadership. So he is in a very difficult position.
E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution, David Brooks of The New York Times. Thanks to both of you. Have a great weekend.
And you too.
This is NPR.